a doctor who specializes in Lobish evaluations for the children's services population in the who has four offices, I believe, between Bridgeport and the New York state line along the coast. We've added a couple of newer doctors, and there's some significant headway that's been made. Part of the issue is some of the doctors who have come on very recently are not able to, in their own practices, make glasses on the terms that are required, rather by state procedures. In other words, in advance of the client paying. And we've worked with Michelle Provost, our Chief Fiscal Administrative Officer, to devise a few workarounds. And so we're in the process of reaching out to some optical providers to fill that gap. At the same time, we're also trying to recruit additional low vision providers, and there are some staff involved, a few of the adult services staff and some others, in trying to make sure that we're not neglecting any geographical area of the state, so that there's a robust group of doctors from which to choose. And I'm not sure that I don't know that there's anything that I've neglected to mention in terms of that, except to say that a member of Catherine's staff has been very helpful in, this is not specific to low vision, but in creating the BESBI report form as a fillable document, which would frankly make the processing of iReports a much easier process. A lot of doctors fill the report in by hand, and there's a great deal of clarification that's necessary when we're getting ready to enter clients into the database. You know, from illegible entries in any number of areas. I think the agency is very well aware of the critical role of low vision services, and so you know, it's been really gratifying to be part of that that effort that's taken place in the last several months. You know, of trying to take some aggressive steps to rebuild the low vision procedures.
Well, you've appointed somebody from your staff to help out.
That is true. Yeah, there's a couple of people working on it right now from adult services.
Okay.
Chris, does your staff anticipate preparing a calendar for 2023, and have you started work on that?
So, we will be doing that. The longtime DAS employee who had created the calendar template every year has retired. So we're working to see who in the DAS print shop, which is the program within which she worked, would be able to take the reins and do that next year.
Thank you. I'm glad that you guys are on that.
Yeah, I'll happily report on that as well at our next meeting.
Any other questions for Chris or Lori, for that matter? Hearing none, I thank you for your report, and we'll move on to the next item on the agenda, which is Children's Services. Catherine, you have the floor.
Great. Thank you, Al. Good morning, everyone. And yes, I believe you received my report ahead of time, but I'll go through it again. I wanted to especially mention that we have a new education consultant on staff. Her name is Molly Bryant, and she was hired in February. We're excited to have her. She is located in Western Connecticut. And then I'm sad to say that we lost two education consultants. Sarah Rios was hired, I'm going to say, at the same time as Molly. Her spouse is in the military, and they received notice that they were going to be transferred. So Sarah was very disappointed that she was with us for about a month and had to leave. And even said, is there any way I can work remotely? And I said, well, keep that in mind, Sarah, but we do provide primarily in-person services. So we were sorry to see her go. We were sorry to see Champagne go. But the good news is we still have 29 education consultants. We have 2 O&M instructors, and we have 1 vision rehabilitation therapist. We currently have 922 active children's services clients, and out of those, a little over 702 to be exact, are served by BESBE education consultants. So I highlighted some of the programs we've had since we met in the fall, and I was actually surprised to see the list, because keep in mind, now that there is a bit more in-person events and activities happening, we were really remote, especially in terms of expanding core curriculum activities and opportunities up until about a month or two ago. But even so, for the second year, we conducted our annual series of fall in services online. We will be returning to in-person next fall. I won't go through the numbers for each day, you have those there, but I wanted you to see that, you know, we had a large number of people register. Not as many people ended up actually participating in the online format. What we found, and what I have found, is consistent throughout the state in terms of the field of education, is you really have more success with in-person participation than online training. But even so, we are happy we were able to provide training to education team members. We had a virtual fall friendship day. We had 2 students participate. This was before Omicron reared its ugly head, and the 2 students were able to get together in person. And while there were only 2 students, I want you to know this was really impactful, because these were 2 individuals who were really struggling with returning to in-person school, in-person socialization. So this was a fantastic opportunity for them to connect, as well as work on expanding core curriculum skills. We also published our fall edition of the BESBE Buzz, which is the children's services newsletter. We also published it in Spanish. There will be a spring edition coming out in April or May. The BESBE Buzz is always available online. They are archived on our website. If you would like to take a look at an issue, I'd love it. We have a lot of information. Very often we have students who write articles, staff contribute articles, and then we have general tips and information. We had a mini in-service at the Jangris Center, where we have a large number of students. So this took place in November. So there were 40 education team members at the Jangris Center who participated. It was really fantastic. And I'm going to say we have a nice partnership with them. They really prioritize our any trainings that we make available to them. So Kendra Janice conducted that, and she was assisted by 2 education consultants. And they reviewed a variety of cited guide and O&M techniques. Then in terms of professional development, the children's services staff are members of NEAER, which is the Northeast chapter of the Association for the Education and Rehabilitation of the Blind and Visually Impaired. I'm sure we have members from adult services and VR and maybe even BEP as well, but the New England states take turns planning and organizing this annual conference. And it was supposed to be in person last year, and of course, because of COVID, everything was canceled. Connecticut was already well underway with planning an in-person conference, had to shift gears, and the children's services staff worked really well as a team to put together a very successful online conference. I have to say, out of all of the online trainings and conferences that I have participated in the last 2+ years, I'm not being biased because it's my staff, but it really was the best. They made it as informative but as personal and friendly as possible. The presentations were recorded, archived, and even available to the conference participants for a few months after the fact, and it was just amazing. I think they blew everyone away. And we had 190 participants from all across the United States and Canada with 30 concurrent sessions. Just really phenomenal. Rotating back again to a student event, we had a holiday sing-along and hot cocoa event in December where we had a group of students participate. So they worked on making the hot cocoa online. We have actually had really great success with these online cooking activities since COVID started. I wasn't able to participate in this one, but I have participated in a few of them. And I'm impressed with the planning my staff do. They really, really do a thorough task analysis and think and almost overthink every step involved. And I love seeing the students do these activities, and it's really great. I mean, they've gotten so creative. So that was super. And I want to also point out an event that is not included, but the staff really put a lot of time and effort into. We had a rock climbing event planned for transition age students right before the holiday break, and we had to cancel it, unfortunately. That is when Omicron was really prevalent, and we were just so concerned that everyone was going to get sick. So hopefully we can schedule that at a later date. But we had a self-advocacy kickoff event in February that was virtual. And the purpose of that was to bring students together to start thinking about creating an ability statement, and also incorporated a cooking activity as an icebreaker. We're really into our cooking activities in children's services. We had a super in-person event just this past March 1st. This is really an annual event. We work with Ski Sundown and Stride, and we had an adaptive ski event, very well attended by our students. And you can see that the parents gave positive feedback. A lot of them were initially apprehensive about having their children participate, but they were so happy when we did. And I have to say that we've had a lot of students who attend this one-day event and then go on and continue to participate in adaptive skiing programs and adaptive ski racing. So it's great we can offer this because it ends up being a catalyst for so many other things. And then with our younger population, we have been offering monthly virtual music classes for quite some time now. And we've been partnering with Connecticut Music Therapy on this. We recently started a second class for school-age students. Before it was just for preschool, birth to three students. So it is, even though it's virtual, it is very interactive. And the parents have given us great feedback on this too. So that's what my staff have been up to, in addition to going out to the schools, making home visits, and performing their regular consultative and direct service duties. They're very active, and I have to tell you, excited that we are moving back into more and more in-person opportunities. That just makes them, and it makes me so happy. And then I also wanted you to know what I have been up to. These are a lot of things that I just do on a regular basis. I don't think I've really talked about them before, and I thought this would be a good time since I was writing a report for you, that I do represent BSB on the State Advisory Council for Special Education. We, at this moment in time, I want you to know, only have one student representative. And guess what? That student representative is a BSB client. So we have two people from BSB on that council. Our student is doing a fantastic job. I am so proud of her. She represents all students with disabilities as well as BSB. So shout out to her. And I also participate on the executive committee, and I also chair the membership committee. I take that role very seriously. We have a very high participation rate, and it's my participation in the council really gives me a pulse on what is going on in the state in terms of special education. And, you know, here's an example. When we were talking earlier about how long it takes to refill positions, I'm going to tell you that I hear this from everyone at the State Advisory Council for Special Education, who is also representing a state agency. So it is an unfortunately slow and painful process to get any positions filled. I think the bottleneck really is DAS, but at least when I hear it coming from other people, I know it's not just us. So that's what I've been doing there. I have also, with this, through the State Department of Education, I was participating in their State Performance Plan annual performance report process. This took place this past fall into January, and again, there were different stakeholder groups represented, and we met at least twice a month for presentations, discussions, and gave feedback. And again, it's a good way for me to hear what the challenges are in all areas of education in Connecticut. What are the successes? What are we doing well? But what do we need to build on? And I, through the State Department of Ed as well, I am a member of a work group where we're drafting some guidelines for the education of deaf and hard of hearing and deafblind. Mary Johns is also on that work group with me. She's one of the ed consultants. And Mary and I also represent BESB, the New England Consortium on Deaf Blindness. We meet in Connecticut once every two, sometimes 3 months. We're all very busy, active people. So I want to say every 2 to 3 months. But we're emailing each other constantly, and I disseminate information to the ed consultants and the itinerant teachers as appropriate. So, and also professionally, like my staff, I'm very active in NEAER as well as AER. So in our region and nationally, internationally, I do chair Division One, which is administration and leadership. I did lead a presentation through Division One this past fall. I will be doing another one later this spring. I'm excited about this role because I get to interact with other people in the vision education, director supervisory field in New England, but also throughout the United States and Canada. And we can really brainstorm with one another. If someone has an issue they would like to discuss, we can share information, we share ideas. I really enjoy it, and I think it's really benefited my program immensely. And then and I also want to add that we are planning more programs. We have our parent education program in person coming up in April. Typically, we do a topic that is just for parents. Every now and then we do something that's more family oriented, and what we heard from families is they just want to get together. So we are doing a get together at a farm. It's for families of our younger children, and we'll have a storyteller. We're going to have copies of the story that's available for the children. There will be an opportunity to interact with some of the farm animals, and I hope that families will be able to make connections, and I'm excited to be able to meet with families in person at this event. We're also planning Camp Independence at Channel 3 Kids Camp. That is scheduled for July 31st to August 5th. I'm just waiting for that contract to be finalized, but I've already had colleagues and families ask about the camp, so I'm excited that people want to go. Our mobility staff is also planning Skills for Life this summer. Dates are to be determined, and they, again, during COVID, had to do this online, but I think they're hoping they're going to be able to return to an in-person format this year. And we're also planning our fall 2022 in-services. We're going to return to in-person, and we're hoping to do them off-site. The last several years, before COVID, we were doing them at BESB, but we want to return to an off-site location, and I think we're going to have to condense some of the days. We do anticipate some retirements, so we will not have as many seasoned staff available to do these presentations. So we're just adjusting and shifting gears so that we can meet the needs of education team members while also not overwhelming the BESB Children's Services staff. Any questions?
Yes.
This is Catherine.
I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead, Eileen. Sorry, Catherine. Go ahead, Eileen.
I'm sorry, Catherine. I noticed the position of, I lost my place, vision rehabilitation therapist. Is that a new position?
No, that's, we, you know, that's her formal title. That's Jessie Mabry. She's really our assistive technology instructor. That's what she does. But her formal title is vision rehabilitation therapist.
Okay.
Welcome.
Catherine, you got a question?
Yes. I was just curious where a proactive parent would go to see what offerings are up. Is there a calendar online? Is there something that we can go online and see what's available by way of these events, other than the TBI telling us?
Yeah, you know what? That's actually a really good question, and I think that that's a really good idea. We have an internal calendar where staff are supposed to post activities. But you know what? I love your idea to have an external calendar that is available for the public to see. So
I just think it's easier for parents to maybe say, oh, look, there's something later in the month and we have a free day and we can participate versus just being told by our TBI. I know that I have fewer meetings with our TBI because they're focusing on meeting with the teachers and the school, yeah, and things like that versus home. So I wouldn't necessarily get all that information. So yeah, it would be very helpful. I just looked online quickly to try to find something, and it doesn't seem like there's anything on the website or anywhere else. So there's really no way right now, currently.
So I have a question. If for some reason, because I like that idea, I like the idea of just having it there, you can go anytime and look. If I can't get the calendar set up or set up as quickly as I would now like it to be, would it be helpful for you if we did a email, if we, you know, did a mass mailing to parents, or do you find it's easier for you to just have a calendar you can reference?
I think a calendar is the easiest way so that you can have an understanding. Sometimes when you see lists of dates, it just doesn't really hit home as far as seeing, you know, if something's on a calendar, you can sort of get a better understanding of when things are taking place than just a list of dates that you sort of, you know, write off. But I also think things to be on there, like you guys have like the book kits, which are very amazing as far as, we love those book kits. And sometimes it's like, oh, well, we had those, but we gave them all out, now we don't have them. It would be really useful if it was like, hey, on this date, you know, this book is coming out, and, you know, ask your TBI to reserve one for your family. Or it would make it so much more useful to have all these things there so that the parents could be more proactive in asking for things for their children.
That's a really good suggestion. I really like that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Catherine?
Al, this is, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Eileen.
I just have two comments. I think Catherine's description of online events emphasizes the point that Steve made at the beginning about times are changing, ways of doing things are changing, and I know, of course, there's going to be more in-person events, and that's a good thing, but undoubtedly online events will continue. So it sounds like a great idea. My other comment is, it was so helpful to have these reports ahead of time. Because maybe it's my age or what, but I can't absorb everything listening to so much information. It's very helpful to have these, but also it takes probably more than a quarter of the meeting, every time we have a board meeting, to go through reports. And if you look at the clock now, we don't have a lot of time, and we still have quite a bit to cover on the agenda. This is not meant by way of criticism, but only thinking that I hope getting reports beforehand or an outline of a report or something could be a precedent, and this could be the beginning of it, so that maybe eventually we as board members could look at these reports and have more time for discussion for a board business generally, including asking questions about the report.
I think that's a great idea, Eileen, and I'll let you in on a little secret. I think that the other supervisors and I have actually been preparing these reports for a long time. We've all done this. We have submitted them. When Lisa was here, we would submit them to Lisa because it would help her with her meeting minutes. She could pick out what she wanted to include. We could reference them when we were talking to all of you. So I don't think it'll be difficult for us to transition to this format because we've been doing it. And if it will free up time, I mean, I don't want to speak for Al or anyone else in the board or the other supervisors, but I'm all about streamlining things, and if this is helping to streamline the process and give the board more time to talk about other things, why not?
Thank you.
I thank you both, Catherine and Chris, for putting out an excellent report, and I think they are very helpful, and I look forward to reading them before every meeting so that we will...
Steve.
Yes, Andrew.
That Andrew
is here.
The floor.
Go ahead, Steve, the floor is yours.
Hi, and thank you for the report. I wanted to make one more question. You had like 200 children. Are they not receiving services? Are they in a holding pattern? You said there are like 922 clients, and then you had with teachers. What about the other 200?
That's a good question. Those other children are actually served by itinerant teachers hired by the towns.
Yeah, that wasn't clear in the report.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. Thanks for pointing that out, Steve. I would wonder that too.
Okay, that second thing is I wanted to compliment your team to put together the NEAER conference.
Oh, thank you.
And especially Dave Perlis, our moderator session. Many of you may not be aware, but I did a presentation on emergency preparedness during storms and so on, compared it to the visually impaired blind community. And when they did the evaluation, 86% of the people that attended our session were pleased with what we did. It's a good start. But I just wanted to encourage staff members to do presentations or often because we can all learn from all the experience. Our thing got accepted. They had a lot of applications. And I just wanted to share your experience. Thank you.
I know, I forgot everyone. There were so many people who are affiliated with BESBE who did presentations, so I'm sorry, Stephen, that I forgot to mention you. But I recall the program and you were there, and thank you for representing BESBE.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. We enjoyed it, and we learned a lot from it.
Great.
Thank you, Steve. Any other questions for Catherine? I'm sorry, Steve, were you done? We'll take that as a yes. Any other questions for Catherine? It was nice to hear the phrase in person repeated several times because I am, like so many others, looking forward to more in-person gatherings so we can see each other, which will be very nice. But I want to compliment you, Catherine and Chris, for putting out excellent reports, and I feel as if we have a great deal more insight than we did before we came here today. So, thank you, and I'd like to move on to the next item on the agenda, which is the state plan. And for that, Mary, you have the floor.
Okay. I'm just going to give a little background on the state plan real quickly. I'm not going to give a long report. But back in 2014, with the passing of WIOA, which is the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, which governs voc rehab, in that act, we are now charged with creating what's called a unified state plan. This plan is actually a state plan with all required partners involved. The required partners are Department of Labor. Under Department of Labor, there's a few programs, VRS, BSBY, and Adult Ed. So this plan is created